Welcome to the Representing Rural Podcast by Rural Community Alliance, and we are in our second episode of featuring some of those who were recognized as champions of rural Arkansas by Rural Community Alliance this summer. And our second guest is Dr. Kelly Mitchell Ferris, the current CEO of Lee County Cooperative Clinic. How are you today, Dr. Mitchell Ferris?
I am doing wonderful. Please call me Kelly.
Okay. Okay, Kelly.
How are you?
I'm just fine. It's been a very busy week, but just glad that we're coming down to the end of it now.
Absolutely.
So I won't, keep you too long. Just want you to start with sharing a little bit about yourself and your journey on, how you made it back to your community to now serve as the CEO of Lee County Cooperative Clinic.
Sure. And that's something I'm very excited to talk about. I tell young people all the time, I never thought I would be here in Mariana. I hear a lot of people complain about rural living. Yeah. And I was one of those people. I graduated high school. I graduated from Lee High School here in Mariana in 96. And I said, I'd never come back. I did not see myself coming back. But I tell people one of my biggest accomplishments has been coming home. And so about 12 years ago, my father, and of course, when you have a daddy's girl, they want you close to home. My father called me and said, there's a job opening at the clinic. You should apply. And at that time, I lived in right outside of Memphis, and I was working on my doctorate in public health. And my dream job was to be the CEO or president of a health company. And so I felt like, wow, this is an opportunity for me to come home and do something I'm passionate about at home and make a difference at home. And so I applied for the job, got the job. And at that time I was the depression care manager. And a couple of years following that, I became the quality improvement coordinator. And from there, 5 years ago, became the CEO. And so I am happy I came home, to say the least. And it really is probably one of my proudest accomplishments.
Yeah.
Is being able to work for the people in my community.
Yeah. I didn't know that journey, first of all. I didn't know you'd been in different positions with the clinic before becoming the CEO. So thank you for sharing that. And I'm always interested to hear stories of people like yourself who come back home. I'm a come back homer myself. I know I just made that up, but I'm always interested to hear, and it's always consistent. Never had in your initial plans, to come back home, but we see the impact more, and it's home for us. So this is hard work. So thank you for serving in your current capacity. So what inspired you to become involved, I guess, first in public health and then now in your more outside of the clinic, your leadership in the community? Like what inspired you to first pursue public health as a career and then become involved with your community outside of the clinic?
So my passion had been and still is in sports. And I was working on my degree. Initially wanting to work in sports management. And at the time I was a fitness coach, and one of my clients, believe it or not, said, you should not limit yourself to working with athletes. The passion you have should be shared with everyone. And I really took that to heart, and I changed my major and went into public health. And it was that one conversation with that client at a fitness facility where I was working that said, why are you limiting yourself to athletes? The other people need you. And that is what triggered me to change direction. So, I say that it seems, a little cliche, but words matter. And if you see something in someone, you should tell them, because you never know how they could affect, their lives and the route they take in their lives. I love sports. I absolutely am passionate about sports and could see myself working in sports, but it will not give me the same fulfillment that I get every day working with people in the community.
So we know National Rural Health Day is what, like November the 16th, I think.
Coming up in a couple of weeks.
So or in the health realm, and we you can also speak outside of that because all of it is interconnected and related. But what are some key issues or challenges that your community faces in the health area and overall, and how do you and your team go about addressing them?
So, everything I look at everything as working together. And so, I actually had my staff just yesterday watch a video about the history of community health centers. And we actually, Lee County Cooperative Clinic is the first federally funded health center in the state, one of the first in the country. But in looking at that history of community health centers, they talked about social determinants of health. Even 55, 56 years ago, when the first community health center started, we're in our 54th year. But 57 years ago, they were talking about how the environment and how things in your community, those social determinants of health, they didn't call them social determinants of health, of course, affect your physical health. And so when you live in a rural community where it may be something as simple as sidewalks aren't on every street, street lights aren't on every corner, when there's a food desert, there's one grocery store to choose from, and that one is not accessible for everyone in your community and those people that live even further out into the rural area. So all of those things are challenges for communities like mine, and it all affects those social determinants of health. It all affects our physical health, our mental health affects our physical health. If we are not able to exercise and have access to gyms or safe sidewalks, even to if someone wanted to go out and walk for exercise, are they even able to walk on the sidewalk? Right. And
Did they have
so,
sidewalks?
so not is there a gym in your community? Is there a sidewalk for you to safely walk on in your community? And so it's things like those that we have to work on. I mean, of course, you want there to be accessible healthcare. You want there to be doctors and nurses in your communities, which is another challenge, right? But even something as simple as having a street light so that you can walk after you get off work or before you go to work so that you can safely do those things is a challenge. So we always, talk about how hard it is to find doctors, looking for one now, but how hard it is to find doctors to work in rural communities. But there are other things that simple things that communities can change ourselves. We can go to our city councils. We can talk to our mayors about, those street lights, those sidewalks, trying to get businesses to come into towns. One thing I say about Mayor Barnett in Hughes that, one of those communities that you lose a school and look what happens to your community. But he's done some great work there and bringing businesses in and having opportunities for people to come back home. And that's what it's all about, making sure that you work with what you have and the people are the are your greatest resource, even when you can't find those things that larger cities may have.
I love that you talked a little about Lincoln because I'm in a similar situation. A lot of the communities that RCA is connected to, they don't have a local like school anymore. Their children are transported outside of the community for their schools due to Act 60. But that is not, and it should not be the end for communities. It takes a lot of hard work and, you know, pulling yourself up, but it is possible. And Lincoln is one of the communities that has shown that. We have Witch Springs up in the North Central region. The first guest, Andy, up in St. Joe, they're not giving up. So, but you have to have that that spirit, you know, to not want to give up. See that as the end, but as an opportunity for new. So I see that the clinic. I know Miss LaFay, she works pretty hard to get the clinic outside of the walls of the clinic. So you want to talk a little bit about, you know, your involvement in the community outside of the clinic?
Yes. So I tell people all the time that we are not just here for our patients. We are here for everyone in the community. And so we have to take that work outside of these four walls because there are those people that have distrust of doctors or just don't believe in going to the doctor. There are people who are scared to go to the doctor. So, you know, you have to take opportunities to the people and have to get outside of those four walls. So we have an excellent outreach team that does just that. They know I'll always say yes. They've gotten to the point where they don't even tell me they've scheduled something. They're in Haines right now at a health fair that I had no idea about. Wow. Because I tell them, stop asking me, just go, just go. And so we make sure that we're reaching people where they are. Our mission is to provide excellent care and superior service at every interaction. We talked about that mission statement, and originally it was to provide our patients. But I asked our board of directors, can we drop that, our patients, and just say to provide excellent care and superior service at every interaction because of that outreach that we do. And so everyone we touch are not our patients, and everyone we touch does not happen inside of these four walls. And it's so important to be able to get out and reach people where they are, whether it's in their home, their church, at the setting up a table at the grocery store, or going to the senior center. You have to meet people where they are.
So that was one of your successful initiatives or parts of the clinic. Do you have any more that any successful initiatives or projects you can share that have made a positive impact on not only Lee County, Mariana, but the other areas that you serve?
So we have several of them, and I'm going to talk about the big one.
Okay.
Second, you probably know what I'm talking about.
I think so.
But one of the things that has been successful for us is our mobile unit. And so thankful for COVID funds. You know, there are a lot of people talk about the negatives from COVID, but there were some positives. Yeah. Some of the funding nonprofits received and businesses received yielded positive results. And one of those things was our mobile unit that we're able to take out into the community. And it is a fully functioning unit, medical unit. So we can do labs on it. We can do immunizations on it. We can take it into a housing project and have people come onto the unit and be seen and be treated. They don't have to come to the clinic for service. And so that is one thing I'm very proud of. But another thing that I'm extremely proud of is our new facility. We are in our 54th year of service, and we have been in our current location for 52 years. Wow. Same building, 9,000 square feet. We've added on over the years, but we are currently in the middle of construction for a 20,000 square foot facility, more than doubles this one. And it has been a long time coming. We are watching it being built. Our staff, our patients come to this clinic every day and are able to see that facility being built right next, adjacent to this building. And it already is been a positive. People come up to me in the community and say how excited they are about it. We'll be able to hire more staff. We'll be able to see more patients. And so just having it there, that building, just being able to see it being built, yes, has already been a positive for our community.
I can speak of that because I come through the area quite a bit, and it's exciting to see that that mm-hmm. is happening, you know, in real time. So as a child, I remember coming to that building. I didn't know it had been there that long, but I remember, you know, my mom and myself having to go up there and some of my other relatives. So Lee County Cooperative Clinic, and not only that one, but the one in Lakeview. So it has really been an indescribable resource to the Delta, to this region of the state. And hearing about the history that you gave us today, it really, I've lived it. I've lived some of that history, and I've lived the importance of that facility, of that entity. And I'm glad to see that it will now have a facility that is forward and future ready. So thank you, Dr. Kelly, or you said just call you Kelly. Thank you for the work that you put in to make that possible. Let's see. Collaboration. What are some groups outside of the clinic that you collaborate with?
So we recently had a group from UAMS come and talk about childhood obesity, and they brought in some researchers to just ask us questions about what's going on in the community and what our needs are. And one of the things I told them is we're always open to partnering. My first answer is always yes. And then I say, what do you need us to do?
Yeah.
So we partner with whoever we can to make a difference in the community. One of those partners is UAMS. My first job here was a part of a study that we completed with UAMS on rural telepsychiatry and being able to provide psych services within the clinic from providers there at UAMS via telemedicine, and how that how that can help improve care in rural areas that may not have access to psychologists and psychiatrists. So we partner with them. We partner with the health department. We partner with our nutrition agent here in the in Mariana, and she comes on site and she'll make recipes in our lobby and show people how to make healthy snacks. And we really truly partner with everyone, the sororities in our area. We just partner with my Sorors of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority Incorporated just this week, and Legal Aid, showing people how to do estate planning and living wills. And who would have thought Lee County Cooperative Clinic would be at an event like that? But it takes all of us, yes, right?
Absolutely.
To do events like that and help people with legal aid issues. Because again, that's, again, those social determinants of health that can affect your physical health. But we are always open to partner with different organizations that share in that mission that we have.
So how do you engage and involve the youth in your community?
Man, I love working with the youth. So every summer, I can't even say how many years we've done this. As long as I can remember, we have student workers come on site. And it's even some have worked directly with me. But we find jobs for them around the clinic where they can get that work experience. They can get experience in leadership or having interaction with patients and other staff members to try to prepare them for life after high school or life after college. We've had some college students as well. But one of the things that I always tell them is go and get that degree or that learn that trade and come home. I like for them to come and see what we do here and hopefully have a wonderful experience and want to come back one day and work here and have a career here at Lee County Cooperative Clinic. Because one day you may be the depression care manager and 12 years later you're the CEO. You know, I won't be here forever. And so I am really big on mentoring young people and try to help mold them into being servant leaders so that we can raise that next generation of leaders in the community.
Speaking of the next generation, you know, it's getting harder to retain, you know, our talent in smaller communities. So what strategies or policies do you think are important when promoting the economic development and social well-being of your community?
So, one of those things, like I said, working with the youth and having them be able to come into different or community organizations. That was one of those programs that I was so happy to see come through the state several years ago, where they had funding to pay those youth for their summer work. But that's something we need to continue to do. We didn't do it this summer. So those youth that did volunteer came to get volunteer hours, but to be able to pay them, it helps not only that youth and their household, but it helps the economy. And it helps them learn about different trades because they're not just coming here to the clinic. They're at the bank, they're at the school, they're at Food Giant or you know any other business in the community where they can go work and get that experience and help them make a decision on what they want to do with their future. So being able to fund projects like that is very important and hopefully our friends at the state will look at doing that again next summer. But you training is something I'm very big on. And so we see a lot of people move away from rural communities because of opportunities that they have in larger cities. But training, having training available that allows them to hone those skills that they have, those things that they love to do, that they're passionate about. They should be able to find that training at home, you know, and be able to have a sense of pride and belonging in communities. You know, if you live in a community and you don't work in the community, how engaged are you in what happens in that community? If you don't have opportunities to grow not just physically, but to grow emotionally and have a tie to that community. If there are not organizations in the communities that you live in that give you a sense of that you've done something, that you've worked, that you know you've actually put in some type of like idea that you want to be able to look at things and look at things in your community or and say, I had a part in that.
You're right, and that's a big part of what, you know, we're trying to do with our youth network is work on the pride that they have for their communities, because that would change a lot. You know, we talk about them seeing a trash can and disregarding the trash can is there and just throwing it beside it, but that to me that links back to the pride of And, you know, for smaller communities, schools, the institutions that they represent, they were part of that pride. So when you no longer have that, you know, that piece in your community, it's left up to that community to help, like you said, kind of hone, like, what is it that we can do to make sure that our children still have a sense of pride in where they live.
Right. So they don't leave. Yeah, they don't leave and not come back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody won't have the same story that I have, where I had this opportunity and decided to come home. We want people to feel prideful about their community before they leave.
Yes.
And say, I want to go and learn a trade, learn a skill, get a degree, travel the world even.
Yeah.
So that I can come back home and implement those things that I learned at home. You know, we want that to be the plan when they leave, to come back.
Mm-hmm.
Or to even not have to leave in the first place, you know.
Yes, not have to leave in the first place. So what do you feel, you can give me one, a significant opportunity for growth in your community? Overall
business development. We have a lot of people in our community that have great ideas. COVID showed us that.
Mm-hmm.
People got very creative, right? So many small businesses or startups came from COVID, but it shouldn't take a pandemic to have people have those types of opportunities or feel like, okay, I've lost my job. I've got to figure out how I'm going to make ends meet, right? So we have an opportunity to continue to put into people, to help people start businesses, to help people find funding or, again, hone those skills that they'll need. Whether it's business classes or teaching people how to create marketing campaigns and whatever it takes to have people have successful businesses at home. But we have a great opportunity to help people start those businesses and keep those businesses.
Do you feel like that's something, like, what would support that? Is it something at the legislative level statewide, or like, what do you think?
Absolutely. So not just, you know, we look to the state a lot.
Yeah.
And we don't do something because the state isn't implementing it, unfortunately. But that's something we can do within our communities. Yep. You know, we don't have to wait.
Mm-hmm.
Because year to year, you never know who's going to be there at the state level and what their plans for the state are. You don't know you don't know what their goals are. You don't know if they'll end programs that the previous officials put into place. Are they may improve on those programs. So we have to do things within our communities ourselves and not rely on the state. Sometimes, unfortunately, but it would behoove our friends at the state to make sure that they are offering those resources, because there are communities like ours, like Hughes, Arkansas, that if you don't have a Lincoln Barnett,
yes,
you just continue to let that community decline. When, you know, the state can have programs already in place that, oh, wow, this school closed. Well, hey, the school doesn't have to close because the state is doing it, you know, has implemented laws and funding that'll help schools not have to close. But when they do, what are we doing to help build those communities and keep them going and build those people in the community? So there will be more Lincoln Barnett's, and I use him because I know him and I see,
I know
what he's done in Hughes. But it's not, you know, when you don't have those people with that vision,
mm-hmm.
unfortunately, those towns can continue to decline. And so the state has to, we have to do better for our citizens. Our population will continue to decline, not just in Mariana, but in Arkansas.
Yeah.
Because people will continue to leave Arkansas and move to Tennessee and Texas and, you know, other states that have opportunities that we aren't offering. It really is a situation where I hate to say it, but you know, we just can't, we cannot wait on the state. We can't. We have to pull up our bootstraps and hit the ground running, doing what we can. We have to, you know. It's sad. You would think that, you know, we're, Arkansas is a rural state,
yeah,
right? And so you would want our legislators and our government, all of our government officials, to do what's best for the entire state. Because when the Delta is hurting, the state is hurting.
Yeah. It's, yeah. It's unfortunate.
It's touchy for me. It's a touchy subject for me.
I'm sitting in Elaine today. So I mean, it is to, I don't know. I travel the state quite a bit, very rural areas. And the Delta is different. When you drive the roads, when you see, you know, the environment is different than when you visit a rural community in another part of the state. It's I don't know. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's because I don't know what it is, but it's different. It feels different.
It does. It does. And we live in such a beautiful state.
Mm-hmm.
I've had people who drive through and come, vendors who come to Mariana, and they, you know, of course, drive in those long highways,
mm-hmm,
from whether they're coming from Little Rock or whether they're coming from another state and flying into Memphis or Little Rock and having to drive into Mariana. They always talk about how beautiful the trip was.
Mm-hmm.
How beautiful the trip was, because they're not looking at, they're seeing it through a different lens.
Yeah.
So we have to get back to being able to say, I live in a beautiful state.
Yeah.
My town is beautiful. People that live in big cities are looking at concrete and buildings all day long.
Right.
Right. They aren't getting a chance to enjoy sunsets and look at the clouds and, you know, see trees. That's a blessing.
It is.
We don't look at it like that.
You do not.
People live in New York and they never see, you know, they don't get the chance to see the fall trees. You know, they're missing out on the beauty of the Delta. We take it for granted.
We do. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I don't know how the broadband or the internet infrastructure is there, but could you speak on it a little bit? And you know, we just got the state was awarded $1 billion in this BEAD funding, and now they're accepting public comment, or they're seeking public comment on their initial proposal for, I guess, the deployment, development under this first volume iteration or whatever of this funding. How does your community, how much does your community need it? How is the current, like, internet infrastructure or connectivity infrastructure, and not just internet, but like phone, like cell phones, like how is that?
We are in desperate need for improved services.
Mm-hmm.
So Lee County Cooperative Clinic was blessed maybe 10 years ago, even, to switch over to fiber optic. And just think, people don't even have fiber optic service now. We got it probably 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. So we were able to have improved internet service here for the clinic. We were able to, even at our site in Lakeview,
Wow.
Because we had fiber optic meant the people in that community was able to have access. It's there. But is it being utilized? Are people able to afford it? Are people able to, have computers or smartphones or what have you, where they can even connect to it, right? But 10 years later, we have services outdated. So even now, I can be in my office, which I'm in right now, with great service. But I can walk down the hall and lose connection.
Wow.
This is a medical facility.
Wow.
And that's internet service. I'm fine on my phone in my office. But some other staff in their offices, no service on their phones. Same building, same.
Right.
That's how unreliable it is. And we just have to do better. We have to have updated technology. So even in rural areas where that have, when you do get that service, when you do have the opportunity to have broadband services, the key still will be to being able to keep it up to date.
Yeah.
So 10 years down the line, it's not outdated and we're back at square one. So, we have to keep that in mind. We definitely need all the services, all the upgraded equipment and all that's great. But we have to learn how to maintain it and think about the future and how do we continue to fund improvements over the years.
Without COVID.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Because all of this came from that. You spoke on a great point around all of this conversation around connectivity, affordability. So they had ACE, what was the name? Affordability Connect, some kind of voucher, right? That they give people to take, I think, $30 off. But what I have heard, I know in the Elaine area, is that for the basic services that people had, that $30 was kind of like null and void or whatever the voucher amount was, because they increased the price of that basic level.
Yes. And one of the things that this whole program is supposed to do is make sure that the vendors that are selected aren't able to increase their prices. That's one of the things that is not supposed to happen, but evidently is happening. Right, the service provider that gets the contract is supposed to have, it's supposed to be in place that they're not able to do that. It should be, we shouldn't have to worry about being able to afford this service when we've been awarded $1 billion.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
People in the community should be able to know that, wow, I'm getting this voucher. Great. Still can't afford it.
Yep. Still can't afford it. So, Doc, I mean, I want to call you Dr. so bad. Kelly, I won't, again, I'm not going to keep you all day. I just want you to, I guess, to kind of end it with, what is your vision for the future of your community, and how do you plan to work towards that vision?
I'll start with the second question first. I talked about servant leadership and mentorship. And so I know that I won't be around forever. Tomorrow's not promised to anyone. And so we work on the future today. And I want to see more Kelly Mitchell Ferris's in my community. I want to see more mayors of Elaine, more mayors of Hughes who come home and try to make a difference in their community. But in order to do that, we have to start now mentoring young people and grown people, not just young people, but there are people in our communities. And again, people are our greatest resource. And so there are people in our community who have great ideas, who are passionate about living in their community, that we have to give the opportunity to be involved. And so my vision is that whenever I'm not around, that Mariana, Lee County, the Delta, we don't have to worry about who's going to continue my work, because it's already in place. I've already, and it's up to individuals, you know, I've already groomed people to complete my work when I can't. There has to be someone ready to be the next mayor of Hughes, Arkansas, to be the next mayor of Elaine. Mm-hmm. There has to be someone ready to be the next physician that works at Lee County Cooperative Clinic when our physicians are ready to retire. And that has to start now, because again, you know, tomorrow's not promised to any of us.
Yes. You just preached a whole word, I'm going to tell you. Because as an organization, I said, we talk about that quite a bit, how there's a leadership gap in a lot of rural communities. But even on the federal level, I was listening to the news, and it was somebody in their 80s serving in Congress. Like, why? Why have you stayed there that long? Why was it never in your plan, like you laid out, to bring up someone behind you? You've done what you needed to do. Like,
right.
It's selfish.
We have to do it in a way where we, and it could be they don't want to let go.
Yeah.
It could be that they don't see anyone that will continue the work as passionately as they have. But guess what? That's your fault.
Yes.
You should be bringing someone along that you trust to continue that work.
Yes.
I should not be so scared to stop being the CEO of Lee County Cooperative Clinic whenever that time comes. I'm still a young leader. Yeah. Not really, but I should feel confident that there will be someone, and there will be someone that can pick up these reins and do even better work than I've done. Because I've prepared them. That is my job, to prepare the next person, the next people, not just one, to prepare people to be those leaders in the community. And if there aren't any leaders, that's my fault, because I haven't done my job to prepare them. My dad, you know, I don't know how much time I have, but I'll tell you another story. My dad was the dentist here when I was growing up. And so I literally grew up running the halls of Lee County Cooperative Clinic as a child, running down the halls. And now I'm really running the halls in a different aspect.
Yeah.
But one of the things that my dad, who's also a minister, he is grooming the next leaders in our congregation, our church congregation. And so he allows those young men to bring lessons. So all last month, he preached one Sunday, and then the next Sunday, a young man who's in his 20s did the lesson. And then the next Sunday, a young man who was 14 did the lesson. And then the next Sunday, a young man who is 13. And so he's grooming those young men to be able to, when he's no longer able to serve as the leader, to be the minister, to be an elder or a deacon, or there are young men prepared so that our church congregation doesn't die because everyone's gotten so old.
Yeah.
And there are no young men prepared to be the, you know. And he says, you know, it'd be great to find a minister from Memphis, or, you know, people bring in ministers from other states.
Yeah.
But what about at home? They won't be as passionate about that church congregation or their community if they're not from the community.
Yep.
They could be great, but they haven't lived the experiences that that those people in the community have lived. And so it's very important to grow your own. Very important. I could get the best doctor in the world to come work at Lee County Cooperative Clinic, but if they did not grow up in the Arkansas Delta, their lived experience, their understanding of what our patients go through will not be the same as if I have a doctor working here that grew up in the Delta. It just won't be the same.
They say drop the mic. You did what you need to do. You did what you need to do. That's a call to action like none other. You all heard it. We have to make sure that our younger people, people in our communities, period, are prepared to assume these leadership roles when we or someone that's currently in them are no longer there. We have to if we want our communities to survive and thrive. That's a must. That's a must. So Kelly, is there anything else that you want to, you know, give to the people before you leave?
I love you. I love my community, and that's something that I'm gonna tear up. Where's my Kleenex? Oh. I love my community, Kansas.
Oh,
and I just want people to take pride,
yes,
in living here.
Yes,
it is. People talk about the negative. There's so much positive in our communities.
Yes,
but we have to start seeing it. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Thank you so much for giving me your time. Thank you for giving your time and your talent and your passion to your community, to the Delta, to this region of the state. We see it, we feel it, and we appreciate it so much.
You're welcome. Thank you. I love this. You see, I love talking about my community.
You do.
I could talk about it all day. So thank you for giving me this opportunity. And you've made me cry. And see.
Sorry. Sorry, but not sorry. Listen, I've been looking at that the entire time. I said, that is so cool. I immediately knew what it was. So
my brother painted that.
That's beautiful.
And so it's on my wall. It will go with me to the new building. And it will be on my wall in my office there. And so I can look at it every day and be reminded of my pride I have for not just Mariana. Of course I love Mariana, but the Delta in general.
We feel it. We feel it. Thank you so much, Kelly. Hope you enjoy the rest of your day and your weekend.
I will. Thank you. You too.
All right. Bye-bye.